Welcome to the Alcohol Free Life podcast, brought to you by thesoberclub.com. I'm Genuinely Grace. This is for you if you've quit the booze or you'd like to, or maybe you're just sober curious. I'll bring you tips and motivation without any judgment, and there'll be inspiration from experts, quitlet authors, and sober heroes. Hi and welcome to the podcast. Happy Easter if you're listening to this over the Easter weekend. It's always a tricky one, isn't it, when you've got the high days and the holidays of your early days in ditching the booze. You're probably having to be extra vigilant to make sure you do your prep. It's just super important to prep those occasions if you are going to meet family or if you're going to be going out and walking past the pub gardens with everyone looking as though they're having the most amazing, glamorous time. You don't see them the next morning, do you? Someone pointed out on social media recently that the alcohol companies never actually use their customers in their ads, do they? Certainly not the next day when they're worse for wear. But anyways, it can be a difficult time, I think, if you're early days. So just prep ahead. That's really the top tip. It was featured in an article in the South China Morning Post this week. It's a really good piece written by Lois, a journalist, about how you can stick to the decision you've made and how you can avoid letting sober shamers overrule your decisions effectively. So I was featured in there alongside someone else's Ditch the Booze. And it was a really good piece. The more we get this message out there, the better. The more we get the message of positive sobriety out there, it's all good as far as I'm concerned. But if you are struggling, you've heard me say it a million times before, reach out for help, because getting that sense of support and connection really, honestly, is the key. And of course, I would say that, wouldn't I? I run the Sober Club. But honestly, I've seen it so many times. And I know how hard it was for me that when I first started, I didn't have that support. And, thank goodness I made it. But God, I nearly didn't. I was thinking the other day, actually, that I think it was Easter time when I had the most massive kind of triggering experience. I was about 3 months sober, and I did an event. I was kind of working at this event, and it happened to be the day before Good Friday or something like that. And it was the kind of event where after I'd delivered a day's training, I would normally kind of go and celebrate, in inverted commas, with a glass of wine. And my husband and one of my sons met me in central London. It's beautiful sunny day. Everyone's in holiday mode and sort of heading down to the river for drinks. And oh my goodness, I remember just feeling this feeling come over me of like, what am I doing? Why am I depriving myself of this wonderful treat? Surely I can just have one. And it all came flooding back, all the old thoughts, all the old patterns, the old wine witch flying in. And it felt like such a strong craving, such a loud voice in my head that I should go and do this destructive thing. And then my son, who was, I don't know, about 14 at the time, said, oh, I'm just going to, if you guys are, heading off for a drink, I'm just going to go and grab a salted caramel ice cream. He saw a stall just by the river. And I went over there with him. And I suddenly thought, I haven't had an ice cream in years. I mean, literally years, because, obviously you save the calories for the wine, right? Like, why would you have dessert when you can have extra wine? That was my thinking. And I suddenly thought, I think I'll have that too. So I had this salted caramel ice cream. It totally hit the spot. It wasn't that I was craving alcohol. I just wanted a hit, some kind of dopamine hit. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm not trying to say, this is good, ladies and gentlemen, whatever you do, always have ice cream, always go for the sugar. Of course not. But in that moment, it did the trick. It actually saved me. I was saved by the salted caramel ice cream. Because after that, I certainly, got a grip and realised that I definitely didn't need to pour the alcohol in. But of course, that my thing is keep the ritual, change the ingredients. And so I'm really pleased that actually we've teamed up this week with Oddbird, who are just a great brand who make really, really good alcohol-free wines. So we're going to be talking to the founder in a moment. I just wanted to remind you as well that I've launched my 12-week accountability package. And this came about because we did a little challenge in the Sober Club. And I realised that there are so many people who've been round the block a good few times and they just just are at the stage where they just want to do this now, but they want some support. Coaching isn't quite right for them, whether they don't have the funds or even the time to invest in coaching. And sometimes it's not the right time to be digging deep into all of the stuff that we do when we have a coaching session, because it nearly always starts to go into other areas. And, you know, we dig a bit deeper and we use other tools and modalities, all of which is fantastic. But if you are simply at the stage where you have made your decision, you really want to do this, you're ready to rock, but you just want that support and accountability, then this program might be for you. I've only got a few slots because, you know, it's one-to-one with me effectively. It's an accountability check-in weekly. We kick off with a one-to-one call. So if that's of interest, check it out. Go to thesoberclub.com. Look on the menu and it says 12-week accountability package, and sign up for it if you're interested. I've literally got a couple of slots left, so it'd be great to have you on board if that sounds like the thing for you. And of course, one of the things that I'll be recommending, you know, if you're early days, is prepping ahead. And if that means for you that at the end of the day, you want to open a glass, you know, open a bottle of something or have a glass of something nice, then absolutely do that. Your little inner toddler will not accept that cup of tea, you know, so have something really nice and alcohol free. And on that note, I'm delighted to introduce you to Mehmet, who is with Oddbird. Well, most of you know that I am a very big fan of alcohol-free wines, of keeping the ritual, changing the ingredients. And recently, when I went down to the alcohol-free shop in Great Portland Street just before it closed, the trend, the bottle that everyone was talking about was Oddbird. So I'm absolutely thrilled that I get to chat to Mehmet from Oddbird. How are you doing?
Oh, thank you so much, Janie.
Yeah, really good to chat to you. Now, I had, amazingly enough, given that I've been sort of ensconced in this world for quite a while, it's only very recently that I've come across this brand. So I'm really interested to chat to you. And I love your sort of strap line when you say that Oddbird is creating world-class wine liberated from alcohol. That's a great way of putting it, isn't it? Freedom from the alcohol piece. Yeah. So tell us a little bit about the background then, because as you say, you know, originated from Scandinavia. Tell us a bit about the founder, because that's quite an interesting story, isn't it?
Sure. So the story of Oddbird dates back 35 years, basically, to when my mother started working as a social worker and a family therapist in Gothenburg in Western Sweden. And so she did that for 25 years, working as a social worker and family therapist. Mm. And somewhere along the road, she realized her first day and her last days were basically the same. It was parents, or, you know, young, could be either young people or mainly parents, who was just devastated by alcoholism.
Yeah.
So it was a recurring theme that she saw and decided to make a societal change or a cultural change, because the big insights she saw was that one part of it is that it's a substance that creates a sickness, right? So, you know, the disease and the substance creating the disease is extremely glorified in culture and society. And it's, you know, the norm is that you drink. So, the culture and the society in which we live in is very much based around drinking. And it's also linked to very famous people, you know, in popular culture, as James Bond is one of those figures, also Churchill, right? So that's, you know, that was sort of the breeding ground to the thoughts about doing a cultural shift or a change in society. And one of her sort of core ideas or core thoughts was, can we have a society where the question, would you like your wine with or without alcohol, is as common as would you like your coffee with or without
milk? Yeah, I love that. It's so true. That's what we want, isn't it? We're not necessarily up for prohibition. We just want it to be as normal to choose not to drink as to drink.
Exactly. I think it's about, as you said, creating choices for people, because there really hasn't been for a very long time a choice. You're forced into drinking, and if you're not drinking, You either have to have a really good explanation or there's something wrong with you.
Yeah.
So that's absolutely true.
So tell us a bit about your process then, because obviously, you know, brands do the kind of de-alcoholization a different way. But I know you have the finest grapes, as you say, from the best vineyards, and then a special process of aging grapes, I suppose, in barrels. Have I got that right?
So what we do then, based on this core mission, is we find the finest grapes, mainly from France and Italy. We look at the product from a molecular standpoint. Is this wine suitable for de-alcoholization?
Mm-hmm.
So this is some sort of, I would say, secret that we have in-house, where we have, again, together with our partners, managed to be very, very precise on what we're looking for in terms of what wines are suitable for liberation. And we want to be very, very non-invasive in the product. So
mm-hmm.
our product philosophy is we only do wine. So we do not add anything. We do not tinker with the process in any way. And we try to be as natural and organic and vegan friendly as we possibly can, right? So we focus a lot on the winemaking process. That's where we put all our energy. We look at the terroir, the overall nature, soil, grape, the location, the winemakers themselves. We are fully focused on the winemaking aspect and creating this wine that has the expression of the region, expression of the grape. So it's very true. It's very authentic product. And at the same time, we're able to figure out, is this product suitable or is this wine suitable for liberation or de-alcoholization?
Yeah, well, you can really tell. I mean, you know, certainly, as I say, at the alcohol-free shop, it was flying off the shelves. In fact, the first couple of times I went in there to try it, they'd run out. So you obviously made a really big impact there. Just remind us what you have in the range then, what we can get currently.
Sure. So we have our Blanc de Blanc, which is a sparkling white wine from the south of France. We have a rosé, which is a typical Syrah, Southern French sparkling rosé. Then we have a still red and white wine, which is made in collaboration with a family-owned vineyard called Domaine de la Prade. And the product has its name on it, so it's called Audebert Domaine de la Prade. One Merlot Syrah, red organic. And then we have a white still, also Chardonnay. And then we also have... But we have an organic Blanc de Blanc, which we'll be launching quite soon. From Italy, we have a Spumante, and then we also have a Spumante Rosé, a Prosecco Rosé. And then we have two very, very interesting products as well, which is a collaboration with a small family-owned estate called Contrasuarda. Together with them, we have created the world's first low-intervention wines liberated from alcohol, so red and a white. The red one is a Merlot Pinot Noir. It's a fantastic product, which we're very, very proud of, but it's very limited in quantity. And a white still wine, which is Garganega and Vespaiola, which are two local grapes. And what's interesting about these low-intervention products is they take things to the next level. So everything is harvested by hand. There are no additives at all in any way, shape, or form. They take care of all the leftovers to create soil so that they don't have to buy artificial fertilizers or anything like that. And they take care of all the rain to create water so they don't have to buy in water. So it's a very authentic process. They let the grapes ferment themselves, so spontaneous fermentation. So it's a very, very handcrafted process. The climate impact, the CO2 impact, is 1/6, so 6 times less than an average vineyard. So very, very proud of that collaboration.
So right now, your products are available in, where are they available in the UK at the moment?
So Amazon is a dry drinker.
Mm-hmm. And aren't they in, is it Harrods or Harvey Nicks? Did I get that?
Sure, yeah.
Harvey Nicks. Right? Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So So Harvey Nichols, we had a on their menu, it says that our wines are the best wines they've ever tasted without alcohol. They even have that written on the menu, which we're very proud of.
Mm.
But you know, available at most online stores.
Mm-hmm. Cool. So if we were to talk in a year's time, Mehmet, where do you, you know, see this, you know, the future, the whole trend of alcohol-free wines, and you know, where do you hope this brand will be? You know, if we were to chat in a year's time, what do you reckon would be talking about?
Well, I think right now the challenge for not only us but for the category is just getting wide acceptance by the industry. So
yeah,
you know, I'm very, very happy that we have these non-alcoholic bottle shops. You know, Laura at
Club Soda, yeah.
At Club Soda has been doing a phenomenal job.
Yeah,
And so many others, you know, Stuart at Dry Drinker and a few others are doing such a great job. But, you know, I'd really love to see, you know, Waitrose or one of those big players go, all right, here's a big non-alc section.
Mm.
We're going to make it, you know, fantastic in terms of how it looks, how it feels. We're maybe going to do sampling once or twice a week. We're going to have food and wine pairing or food and, you know, beverage pairing. So that's what I would like to see in a year's time, that we have this sort of wider acceptance in general, from the industry in this category, because truly the demand is truly there, and people are, as you said, longing for this choice.
Yeah.
Are able to choose depending on whatever reason, with or without alcohol, right?
Mm.
And so to make that sort of transformation and cultural shift, we need wider acceptance. And I hope and I believe that we will, or you know, are capable of leading the way, and sort of expanding the category and changing the perception of these products or these wines.
Fabulous. Mehmet, thank you so much. It's been great to chat to you. I wish you every success, and let's do that chat in a year's time and hope all that has come to fruition. I really appreciate you taking the time to be with us on the podcast.
Oh, thank you so much. And really, really looking forward to talking in a year's time.
Yeah, brilliant. Right. Thanks very much.
All right. Thank you.
So we have a competition to give away some Oddbird drinks as well. And while we're talking about keeping the ritual, changing the ingredients, you know, don't forget, this really is the key, this prepping ahead piece that I mentioned before that interview. This, if you're going out somewhere, take your own drinks if you're not going to be able to get, you know, if the Oddbird isn't yet in that bar, or, you know, you're not able to access the drinks you want, don't leave it to chance. Take it with you. Just absolutely take it with you. Just go and pimp your drink or take your own and pay the corkage. You know, the more places that come on board, the better. Of course, the Pink, P-I-N-Q, Pink London has opened now. So we're very lucky here in the South that it's the first alcohol-free bar and members club. I went to the press night the other night. It was great to see some old and new friends there. I bumped into Sober Dave and William Porter and a whole bunch of people. Andy Ramage was there. It's great to see Andy Ramage and Matt, Better Life Guy, a whole bunch of Instagram influencers. And it's a really funky place. It's just a great opportunity to go somewhere, you know, that's like a real restaurant, and have an alcohol-free drink. They've got some great mocktails on the menu, and they've also got cheesecake. Oh man, the cheesecake's amazing. And as I say, it's a private members club as well. So my plan is to host an event there as soon as I can get my act together and get something booked. I'm going to do that. But I just wanted to let you know, if you hadn't heard about it yet, definitely worth giving them a follow on Instagram, and definitely worth checking it out. It's in Baker Street, Pink London, and I'm sure I'll see you there at some point. We'll definitely host an event. In terms of events, while I'm on that topic, May the 7th is Sober by the Sea in Southend. It's a low-key, very small Vision the New You Day. It's great fun, but very small number of people though, so there might be a space or two left, but check it out. Go to thesoberclub.com, click on events. There's a meetup in Edinburgh on April the 23rd, that's next Saturday, with our Sober Club coaches. Meanwhile, I'm going to be doing another bunch of training with some Sober Club coaches. If that's something you're interested in for the future, then drop me a message. We're going to have a great weekend. And then coming up the end of May, we're going to be doing another family constellation. So again, if that's something of interest, just register your interest with me. Let me know. And we're planning another date for Champneys as well. So there's a bunch of things happening. I'll definitely get that Pink London date sorted at some point as well. Anyways, as we've been talking about accountability, we've been talking about the importance of sticking to the decision you've made. I thought it would be really nice to hear from another Sober Club member about their journey and what have been the ups and the downs for them. So welcome, Karen.
Well, I love interviewing fabulous Sober Club members who have been with us for absolutely ages. And I'm so thrilled that Kaz Schnussel, have I said your name right? I haven't, have I? Karen.
Schnussel.
Okay. It's a fabulous name. I love it. And it's so great to chat to Karen because she's such a vibrant member of our Sober Club community. And I've known her a couple of years now. And I thought it'd be lovely to share your story, Kaz, because you posted a lovely message on the Sober Club the other day, just, I don't know, just so kind of heartfelt and honest and open and really just cheering everybody on who, you know, is not quite as far along as you are. So I thought it'd be lovely to share your story because, you know, you've had your ups and downs too. So let's take it right back to the beginning then. Tell us a bit about what was happening for you a few years back.
Well, I was Googling mindful drinking because I had no intentions of giving up completely, but I just knew that I was drinking too much. So I just wanted to cut back really in the beginning. Come from a family of, you know, drinkers, as in we were, you know, drank most nights. We were always celebrating with drink. We were always drinking. I worked in the bank from the age of 16, and it was a very boozy area to be in.
Was it? That's interesting. I always find it fascinating the different professions that people say, oh wow, you know, this profession is amazingly boozy. I mean, I'm starting to think all professions are, but that's interesting because you'd have thought that, you know, perhaps people who work in banks are a bit more grown up, but clearly not.
No, we had some well, I look back and say amazing, but maybe not so amazing. Great parties in the banking hall, you know, and just before 9:30, we were busy clearing up bottles from the night before we opened.
Really? Wow. Yeah.
Oh, it was, you know, most Fridays we went out for lunch. He went down the bank, the manager, about 12 o'clock, and one by one we all followed.
Wow.
So, yeah, it was quite a boozy place to be working at the time. I did kind of cut back a bit because when I left the bank, I went into the flower business and had my own business, getting up at 3 o'clock in the morning, and you know, the hours I was working, I couldn't drink more than one or two glasses of wine maximum because I was getting up so early. But I think once I had my son and the mummy drinking then started. You know, we didn't go round to a friend's for a cup of tea while they were playing. We went round for a few glasses of wine.
Yeah, absolutely. I remember those days well. That's quite often when it ramps up, isn't it? The expectation that if you're, you know, dropping your child off for a play date, you know, must be something slightly wrong with you if you're not wanting to drink.
Yep.
Yeah.
And I was in, you know, I was in an area where the parties and things were, I mean, I've had been to some amazing parties, but it was all around a lot of drink. And I was just beginning to wake up in the middle of the night, do the 3 o'clock thing. Why did I do that? Why did I drink that extra glass of wine? I don't think I ever really did anything awful. I certainly didn't hit rock bottom. But I was just getting to the point where I was waking up too often thinking, why did I have that extra glass of wine?
Yeah.
Or why did I sit there last night and watch that film and drink more than half a bottle of wine? why did I do this? Why did I do that? So I just thought, I've got to do something about this. And I Googled mindful drinking in October, November 2019. I think your name came up and I went to the Mindful Drinking Festival and I met you there in January of 2020. Then I went on and went to the Suffolk retreat with Joe and Dom, and you were there.
Yeah, the self-care and sobriety retreat. That was fabulous, wasn't it?
And that
I remember you. I remember you then on that, you know, and back then when you were very new to it all. I remember you were just as I was when, you know, when I first came to it. I don't know if I suppose wobbly is the word, really, isn't it? You were very unsure, unsure whether you wanted to actually stop as well.
Yeah.
You know, that's fair to say, isn't it?
Yeah.
But you know, but very open to learning about sort of all aspects of well-being, I suppose. That's what I remember about when I met you first. And I know you've gone on to say it made a big difference.
Yeah, that weekend I think changed it, because I'd always done Dry January, but I white knuckled it and I was counting down the days, and February the 1st came and I couldn't wait to have a glass of wine. Whereas that weekend, I think that weekend was actually the very end of the week, the January, beginning of February. And so that's when I started the 90-day challenge. But I just remember getting so excited by all the positive things about not drinking, which I've never even occurred to me that there'd be anything positive about not drinking.
Yeah.
It was always, you know, alcohol relaxes me, but actually it doesn't. It makes us anxious.
Yeah,
I have more fun with alcohol. No, it doesn't. You know, you actually have more fun and you remember it if you don't drink. Alcohol makes me happy. Actually, it didn't. It made me a bit depressed. You know, all the things that I thought alcohol did, it was actually the complete opposite it was doing. And I just suddenly got it. I think I just suddenly got it. And I also went home with the thought, you know, I didn't have that thought in my head, which was, you can't drink ever again. I actually had to tell myself, actually, you can drink. If you want to drink, you can have a drink. But because of all these amazing positive things that I had written down and I was beginning to learn, I didn't want to. And I can still drink now. You know, it's been nearly 2 years down the line and I could still have a drink if I wanted one, but I don't want one. But I think that real kind of child in me, if I'd have been told I couldn't ever have a drink again.
Yeah. Yeah. I think we had a conversation, didn't we? One of the coaching sessions that we did together. Do you mind sharing about the fact that you feel free if you don't want to, but I remember back that we had a coaching session where you had had a bit of a trip up and it was actually your inner toddler, if I remember rightly. We said it literally, your inner toddler was having a little bit of a hissy fit and saying, this isn't fair.
And I think I was on day 100, and on day 101, I remember thinking, sod it, I'm having a glass of wine or glass of champagne, I think it was. And I then decided I was going to be a mindful drinker because it was the inner toddler having a strop. I'm going to be a mindful drinker. I'll drink in a couple of weeks' time because I'm going to a party. I'm going to drink next month because I'm going to another one. And I actually had 3 months of mindful drinking. And in 3 months, I went out 3 times and I did drink. But I found it so hard. I actually found it harder than not drinking because I spent my whole time thinking about when I was going to drink, how much I was going to drink, who I was going to be with. And it was actually really hard.
It's exhausting, isn't it?
So I pushed the start button again on the 1st of July 2020. But I did have those 3 months in between where I did have the 3 nights of drinking. But that first 6 months to me, they're the most important months, the months where I did have those three nights of drinking and did the mindful drinking, because that's when I realised I don't want to, really don't want to. So, been so much easier not drinking at all.
Yeah, exactly. Just, you know, share some of the benefits that you found then, you know, the things that have changed for you over this period, because it's been, what is it now then, 2 years? Two and a bit years.
It's 22 months when I push that re-switch.
Brilliant. So tell us how your life has changed, because I think you are one of these
examples of someone who, you know, didn't necessarily have it all easy, to say the least. You know, there's been some ups and downs, but your life is so completely different to what it was a couple of years ago. It's really, it's so inspiring.
Yeah, I was going through and had been going through, you know, this situation, my own relationship, and just not drinking gave me the strength and the courage to do something about it. But it also really, really helped me do it in the nicest, kindest possible way I could. Mm. And I am proud of the fact that we've separated in an amicable way. The old me would have just literally thrown a fit every time we had an argument.
Yeah, but absolutely. I think that's to be able to do something like that, a really massive life thing, like split up with, you know, a long-term partner, to be able to do that with compassion and kindness, you know, and keep it out of the courtroom and out of the, you know, wildly expensive lawyers. Yeah. I mean, that's a gift, isn't it? And you're absolutely right. To do that in a grown-up way is, I think, probably very difficult when you're drinking. Difficult.
That's the big thing that I am proud of, the fact that we did it together with one solicitor and didn't give all these. Yeah, as you say, we didn't give the courtroom money.
Fantastic. That's something to really be proud of. Yeah. Oh, tough as it would have been, that kind of thing is never easy, right? Yeah. And again, you know, I think people are very quick to kind of expect that once you stop drinking, that means everything in your life will be perfect. In some ways, the opposite is true, because it may be that you've been in denial for so long that when you actually stop drinking, I'm afraid, you know, some shit does hit the fan, literally, because it's time to look at it. You actually have to start looking at the difficult stuff. Yeah. The good news is you are more resilient and, as you say, kind, compassionate, to be able to deal with it. But we can't kind of have, you know, just those kind of rose-coloured specs and think that just because we're not drinking, everything will from then on in be perfect.
No, exactly. I mean, I remember kind of, I feel like, I remember writing it in one of the posts, I think. I was literally
on
going
the Sober
back
Club,
to,
yeah.
Yeah, and going through all the, you know, taking back all those different layers. And I just remember one day sitting there sobbing, thinking, I'm literally a pip. I've taken all the layers right down to nothing. I've just got to start again. And you know, but I just feel like I've just got so much stronger. You know, every day is just, and the hours in the day, you know, I can't believe that I'm up at 7 and at 11 I have to tell myself I've got to go to bed, because I'm not tired. I've not fallen asleep in front of the TV or reading a book.
Yeah. And you also fulfilled your lifelong dream of moving to Cornwall. I hope you don't mind me sharing that. I'm so jealous. I'm beyond jealous. Every time we have a Sober Club Zoom meeting, there you are in Cornwall. It's so not fair. I mean, you know, who does that? Who actually does that? Not enough people, if truth be told. People literally kind of talk about, oh, I'd love to do that. You know, well, if not now, when? But, and of course we don't all mean it. We talk about it, you know, don't we? And we say we want a cottage by the sea or whatever. But when you really do want that, then you can take action. Once you've actually got free from the alcohol trap, it frees you up to do the things that you really actually want to do.
Exactly. And I mean, we've all, you know, most of us have got cars and there's transport. And so I still get back to see my friends, but I am really where I really want to be now. And I can actually honestly say that I am happy.
Yeah, brilliant. Yeah. And I know it was also very important for you. You know, we talked about children and, you know, for your son to be that kind of role model, to be present for your son as a young man.
Yes. Yeah. That is, I know we've said that before, but that is my big regret that I didn't do it, you know.
Yeah. Well, me too.
But I feel that he sees a different me as well. He sees definitely sees a happier, healthier me. Mm. And he just sees a more authentic me.
Yeah.
I've had more fun in the last year or so as well, because I can have fun. I can go out and enjoy myself. I'm one of those people, it doesn't bother me if there's people around me drinking, really, really doesn't. But I'll be last on the dance floor, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. And the other thing, of course, is that you have really found your mojo in that, you know, I persuaded you a little bit, but you've absolutely taken the bull by the horns and become an NLP practitioner. You've trained as a sober coach with me. I mean, could you have even imagined that you would be, enhancing your skills in that way? You know, sort of 4 years ago, if I'd asked you, could you have imagined it?
No, never, 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 never. And I actually really enjoy helping other people do what I've done, really. Mm. You know, it's so nice to be in the club. And it is like being at a really lovely, friendly school. I think I said in my post this week, you know, there's no bullies there. We're all in a really, really, we're in the nice gang. We're in the friendly gang. And we're all there for each other. And I've had people around me that have looked after me in the beginning. You know, some of the girls that I was on the phone to sometimes in the beginning, I'm such good friends with them now. You know, it's just one of those clubs where you really do bond. And it's not new people coming in as well. It literally doesn't take minutes or days before we're all friends, you know?
Yeah.
New friends come along.
How important do you think that connection, you know, in the sober club has been for you over the last couple of years?
Oh, I needed the connection. I needed to be able to say, help, you know, I'm going out at the end. In the beginning, I needed it. You know, I'm going out at the end of the week. I don't know what to do because these people are real massive drinkers and I'm worried that I'll give in. But there was always someone saying, all you need to do is take your own drink. Tell them if you're really worried, just tell them that you've got a tooth infection and you're on antibiotics and you can't drink. But in the end, I think menopause even came up. Oh no, I can't drink. I'm, you know, going through the menopause. I made excuses. I did make excuses in the beginning.
That's then, okay, isn't it? It doesn't matter, does it? It's whatever it takes to get you through.
Yeah. But then you just get stronger and you suddenly find the strength to say, you know what, I don't want to drink. I don't want to drink.
Yeah. Yeah. And then it's been great, hasn't it, in the sober club in the last couple of weeks? Because, you know, as you say, you're over 2 years, almost 2 years sober now. And we've just done an accountability challenge where, you know, there's been a lot of people popping up and sort of saying, okay, well, I'll fess up. I'm back at day one, or I'm on day seven again, you know. And actually, you know, rather than kind of those of us that have been sober for a few years sort of thinking, oh well, we'll let those newbies get on with it, actually the members who've been sober for a long time are fully engaged in all of this. And I think partly it's because it reminds us where we were, and it reminds us how goddamn grateful we are as well, doesn't it?
Yeah. And you have to kind of just keep reminding everybody that you've just got to be so super kind to yourself in the early days, because it's not easy. And you can't be ashamed of all the slip-ups. You know, some people feel ashamed, and you can't feel ashamed because you're on there, you're on that journey with us. So you've just got to be really, really super kind to yourself in the early weeks.
You said that lovely phrase, didn't you? What was it you said in one of your sober club posts? Remember what was it you said about what you were praying for is what you've got now, or something like that? What was your expression? Yeah,
remember you were praying for
what you have now.
Yeah, you were always praying for what you've actually got now.
That is so true. I remember back, and that's exactly what I used to pray for. You know, if I could only not desire a glass of wine. Yeah. Well, there you go. Thank you, God.
Wasn't it? It was that 3 o'clock in the morning prayer.
Yeah. Totally. Yeah. And that's exactly it. And so when we have crap days, which, you know, we still do, everyone does, we're human, right?
Yeah.
You know, that's what we can remember. We can remember that this is what we used to pray for. We've got it now. because it's easy to forget that. It really is. Amazing.
I didn't find it that hard in the beginning. I did work hard. I think you have to really know that you have got to give yourself a bit of a kick up the bum. I mean, I did vision boards, and you know, I used to do my little journal in the morning. You do have to give. It's not going to come easily, but it comes with the help. It really does come, and with all the positives that you've got in front of you.
Yeah, I mean, as we've said, so much has changed for you. You know, you've obviously, there are obviously practical things in your life that's changed, you know, in terms of relationship, in terms of moving home, in terms of the incredible skills you've added to your toolkit, you know, so a whole new career is there waiting for you if you so choose. Mm-hmm. But also, you know, you must feel that you've really grown as a person, that you've really just big yourself up for a moment, Karen. Go on, just tell us what's changed about you personally for the better.
Well, I think the big thing is that I feel proud of myself for the first time in a long time.
Yeah, isn't that amazing? What a thing to be able to say. Not enough of us say that. We don't feel that way, do we?
No. I always had that voice in my head telling me off. And I feel like I've got rid of all the nasty thoughts about myself that were constant.
Yes.
So, yeah. Of course, we all still get the odd ones. But I've got rid of that horrible, nasty thought that was always in my head that I wasn't good enough. And now I am enough. Yeah.
Yeah. Fantastic. My goodness. You said it, girl. That's just so brilliant. I mean, how many shelves of self-help books do we all have to have, or shelf help, as I call it?
Yeah.
You know, to get to this. My God, how many years did I go after that? Yeah. And looking at literally everything, because of the work I did, there wasn't a single goddamn, you know, well-being trend or spirituality kind of thing that I didn't get on in order to find that enoughness. All of us, and yet constantly stepping around the elephant in the room that was alcohol.
Stepping around it
and hoping that no one would notice, including myself. I literally was in such denial. I did not see it. I was, you know, anyway, it's not about me. It's just, you know, you mentioned it. It just makes me remember just how bonkers it is. What we all do.
I mean, it does sound a bit mad, but it is actually, to me, it feels like a real miracle that I've actually learned to love myself again.
Yes, really.
That would happen.
I know, isn't that great? Yeah. Isn't it great? How amazing. Well, I think you're such an inspiration, and it's just so wonderful to have you as part of the Sober Club community. Oh, I can't wait to see the magic you're going to create. And I know you're taking your time with it, really, because you probably just want to enjoy your life in Cornwall, and I don't blame you.
Yeah, I have got to get around the fact that actually, Karen, you can't be on holiday for the rest of your life.
It's quite nice, though.
I've got to get on and do some work now.
Brilliant. Oh, well, it's fantastic to have you on the podcast, Karen. What would be your sort of parting words to anyone who's, you know, I don't know, whether they're just starting out or maybe things have just fallen flat for them? What would be your top tip?
Just be really super kind to yourself and really go back to the beginning and think about why you want to do it and write that list of why you drink the alcohol, because actually that list that says alcohol makes me feel good, it doesn't, it makes you feel crap.
Yeah.
You know, alcohol makes me happy, it doesn't, it makes you depressed. You know, just write that list and then...
Yeah, it's important, isn't it, to actually take note of what's true.
Yeah.
You know, and many of the statements that many of the thoughts that we have around booze and the statements that we make are actually not true. Just because they're what society believes is, you know, to be true, they aren't actually true.
No.
And the Emperor's not actually wearing any clothes. So and you know, you're just a fantastic example, Karen, of someone who has literally had a second chance at life. That's really how it is, isn't it, really?
Yep, that's amazing. Exactly how I feel.
Fantastic.
Started.
Well, I really appreciate it. I appreciate you coming on the podcast, and I appreciate that, you know, you're willing to sort of share that, you know, the hard stuff, because I do think that there is this kind of I do sometimes hear people say, well, you know, that's you managed to do it. That's OK for you because, you know, you're everything's OK and you've got, you know, your marriage and your kids and all of that. But, you know, people go through this with all kinds of other shit hitting the fan. Mm. And it will only ever be a good foundation for whatever you're going through. Yeah. And help you behave in the you know, the most compassionate and grown up way possible, which has got to be good for everything, really, hasn't it?
Oh, definitely, definitely. Yeah. Well, thank you for having me on.
Oh, thank you, Karen, and I look forward to seeing you soon. Well, hopefully in Cornwall.
Yeah.
I feel that trip coming on. Thank you, Karen. I look forward to seeing you soon. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you, Karen, and thank you to Mehmet from Oddbird. Don't forget that competition will be uploaded on the site. Check out the 12-week one-to-one accountability package if that's of interest in any of the events I've mentioned. And above all, I say this all the time, do your prep. I sent out a little e-zine saying, Happy Easter, are you whooping it? You know what I mean by that by now. W is for wish, O is for outcome, O is for obstacle, P is for plan. So what is it you want? What's your wish? What's the outcome? What will it look like if you get it? I mean, really put the detail in there. What will it be like? Don't just say, I want to be happy. What does that mean? What will it be like for you? And what are the obstacles going to be? Be realistic. Is it the voice in your head? Is it someone else who always sober shames you? Is it your own family trying to persuade you? Is it the fact that you don't have the alcohol-free drinks in when you need them? Just ask yourself what it is that's holding you back. And then the P, the important P, is for plan and prep. Because this doesn't come, you know, necessarily. We don't kind of fall over sobriety any more than we fall over a drink to relapse. We have to put the work in. You have to. Eventually, it is second nature. But start with, you have to focus on it, like, all of the time. But is it worth it? Hell yes, it's worth it. Have a great Easter. See you soon. Thank you for listening to the Alcohol Free Life podcast brought to you by The Sober Club. Please rate and review. And if you want support, accountability and inspiration, and you want to live your best life without the booze, check out thesoberclub.com.